listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, episode 22 for Tuesday, May 10th, 2022. This is JJ Sefton here with CBD and returning once again our co-blogger and friend, Joe Mannix. Gentlemen, how's everybody doing out there?
Hello, folks. Good afternoon.
So it seems in the wake of the Supreme Court, the leaking, I should say, of the Supreme Court decision by Justice Alito that looks to basically toss the 50-year travesty of Roe versus Wade, our wonderful, what do we call them, the loyal opposition across the aisle is now calling for our heads and blood in the streets. And the latest version is this mayor from Chicago who looks like a either a cross between Mon Calamari and Groot, Lori Lightfoot, basically calling for insurrection in the streets. And it seems to me she hasn't had her Twitter account suspended. But so far, we've had vigils in front of Sam Alito's house. And he and his family, I believe, have been taken into hiding. And all because of people on the left who are funded and very well funded, possibly by the government, sure enough, by people like George Soros and company, who are going around and doxing people's addresses with impunity. And anything can possibly happen, as we saw at a baseball field with the Republican congressman in the form of James Hodgkinson shooting them up. So anything is, you know, it's open season on anybody that that they hate.
Well, what's fascinating about the current imbroglio about the leaked draft majority opinion is that clearly people in the media and the left, but I repeat myself, have not read it. And if they have read it, they are simply lying about it. Alito was very careful to separate his opinion from any extension to broader society as a whole. And it's offensive to me when I read his opinion and I said, oh, look at that. He's saying, no, this does not apply to anything else other than the issue of Roe v. Wade as bad law. And yet they have extrapolated wildly. Yes, what are they going to do? They're going to ban abortion. They're going to ban contraception. They're going to ban LGBTQ, BBQ kids in schools, and, you know, a litany of other ridiculous things that even in their fever dreams they can't imagine.
They said they were going to ban the other one was interracial marriages, which I find kind of funny because, of course, Clarence Thomas is probably going to write the opinion on that, which is a convenient way for him to get a divorce from Ginny because he was always wanted to get away from her, I guess.
Well, you know, she's a Republican rabble-rouser, so I can't imagine that he enjoys her company.
Exactly.
Yeah, my favorite hot take on this came from the Young Turks, from the guy whose name I can never remember how to pronounce.
Stinky Yogurt, whatever his name is.
Yeah, who's asserting that the only reason, totally missing the point of what the Roe v. Wade decision means, right, and making it all about abortion and the dread conservative, is that it's the only reason they want to protect children in the womb is because half of them will be men, because conservatives hate women.
It was the most baffling thing I've seen.
This is the quality of our elite political commentariat. And it's even if they have read it, I don't know that it would matter, CBD. Yeah, a lot of them clearly haven't. But even if they had, they would still just lie about it. Right. They have a narrative being set from on high and they're going to follow it. So the facts of the matter are somewhat irrelevant, or rather their knowledge of the facts of the matter are irrelevant because they're just going to say the same thing they're told to say anyhow. Because it's purely they're all purely propaganda organs. It's not about reporting. It's not about facts. And it hasn't been for an astonishingly long time.
Oh, this is true. And also, I mean, this is a perfect segue into the doxing that has occurred. Sefton alluded to it in his opening. But doxing of a Supreme Court justice is a very serious matter. As little respect as I have for the Supreme Court as currently constructed, it is an important part of American history. It is an important part of American jurisprudence. And for those justices to feel threatened in their own homes is an obscenity. And the fact that the Department of Justice, the Capitol Police, the Virginia State Police, the Maryland State Police, whoever needs to get involved, the FBI hasn't set up an impregnable ring around 9 homes in the United States is disgusting to me. And it's clearly as a result of the hyper-politicization of our government. I know that Sefton beats this drum almost every day, but the FBI is an organ of the Democrat Party, and they are acting accordingly.
They're a tool of political repression at this point. Well, all they do is they seemingly, you know, there's this image of the FBI as Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. and Junior G-Men and, you know, whatever, preventing crime and mayhem in the streets and so on and so forth and securing your liberties, when they basically seem to be, you know, to put it mildly, some sort of an ambulance chasing fraud organization where they set up sting operations and scam operations that they're just basically entrapment stings. And all they do is they self-perpetuate their own, you know, their own sort of bureaucracy at best. And at worst, they're being used as tools of political repression to who are not favored by the junta in power. And the junta in power is leftist. And even when it's a Republican president or a Republican administration, the entire bureaucracy is leftist and is there to preserve, protect, and defend the 100-year counter-revolution of the United States to devolve it into something it was never meant to be. And that's just insane. And from what I also understand, isn't picketing even at a Supreme Court justice's house, even within reason, isn't that just illegal as well? That's a crime.
Apparently it is. I don't know how they got that one passed Congress. It shouldn't be illegal. I think peaceful protest is part of the core of America. But of course they're crossing the line everywhere.
And yeah, what you're describing there, JJ, is yeah, everything the FBI does that isn't entrapment or a false flag is enforcement for the state party complex. And what you're describing there is a word for it. It's secret police or internal security police or whatever moniker you want to borrow from any other tyranny, right? But this is there. Every big oppressive state has to have an enforcement arm to keep the rubes in line. And that is what the FBI has become. I don't know how long it's been that way. I suspect it's been that way for much longer than I would have guessed. But I don't see any reasonable way you can look at their behavior over the last 6 or 7 years and say that that is not what they are.
I would say it probably goes back even longer than that. I mean, we know that I think Andrew Weissman and for sure Robert Mueller, who was, you know, obviously the head of the investigation into the Russian collusion hoax, he was in bed with Whitey Bulger, who was a known organized crime, the head of the organized crime in Boston for decades. And basically, it was his underling, and I forget the name of the guy in question. He was like an assistant bureau chief of the Boston office, and he was in bed with Whitey Bulger, and not only protecting him as a so-called confidential informant, but looking the other way when Whitey Bulger was whacking people and murdering them, perhaps even participating in that. Meanwhile, you had two people who were innocent of any crimes that were locked up in prison because of on the words of Whitey Bulger, and they spent like 20 or 30 years in prison or something just under false pretenses. And that to me is absolutely horrendous. And you're right, Joe, is that it is a secret police. It is basically internal security. And now we have hand in hand going with that. We now have the Ministry of Truth with this Nina Jankowicz fool. And the picture is complete. We have a matching set. We have internal security and we have thought police there to throw you in prison. And the one thing I remember, I think in the last podcast, we talked about this, we touched on it, and we've never really stated what is the purview? What are these people going to be doing if they decide that you and I, as we are doing right now, speaking misinformation? Do they come to our door and arrest us? Do they throw us in jail? Is there due process? What enforcement authority do they have? This whole thing stinks.
That's absolutely the question. What kind of power do they have? What kind of enforcement power do they have? Is it simply a bully pulpit in which she's going to tweet 100 tweets a day criticizing people for their speech? Yeah, I can tolerate that, even though it's being paid for by the government. Actually, I can't tolerate that. This is a government organization, therefore it should not exist. But if they have police powers, then we have descended firmly into fascism.
Well, they are under the rubric of the Department of Homeland Security, or as I call them, it's really the Department of Internal Security. I mean, they are a theoretically part of a law enforcement entity, so they theoretically do have some sort of enforcement power. This is truly, truly frightening.
The other aspect of DHS is a weird organization because, yeah, it has police powers, but it is also the intelligence aggregator and intelligence sharing service. So it's a weird combination of cops and spies, right? Which is actually a fairly serious problem. Those probably shouldn't be the same organization, but is their purview going to be something analogous to law enforcement, whatever that means in this context? Or is it purely intelligence where they're going to keep track of everybody who's out there spreading malinformation and hand that off to somebody like the FBI?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I think nobody knows yet. The whole thing is so insane and so obviously and patently illegal, that they might not have even thought it through that far yet. They probably have, but I've not seen anything about what is this going to look like from an enforcement standpoint. Is it voluntary or mandatory? Do they make recommendations or do they send shock troops? And I don't know that anybody really knows the answer to that yet, but it almost doesn't matter, because the fact that they're talking about anything like this at all is the core problem. Regardless of what their actual mandate or scope might be, the fact that we are at this point where we have an official censorship bureau in the United States of America, that's the problem. I don't care if they're toothless or if they can send a man with a machine gun to kick in my door. Obviously, I care more about the latter, but at the root of it, it actually doesn't even matter. The fact that it exists at all, and that every single elected official who at least pays lip service to the idea of some American ideal hasn't been pounding the pavement and punching his fists against lecterns in press conferences all day, every day. There hasn't been a filibuster of unrelated legislation in the Senate so that they can rage against this obviously illegal and immoral action. That's the real problem, that they did it and that our elected officials are supporting it. And that's a serious, like, catastrophic problem.
Well, let's take a step back there for one second, because we were talking about enforcement, and we talked about they haven't defined malinformation or disinformation or whatever it is. There's no, even, you know, here's invoking Godwin's law. Let's go to Nazi Germany. Before they could arrest the Jews, they had to come up with all sorts of laws, illegal that these laws and horrible as these laws were. They did pass the Reichstag and they became law, and that gave them the sort of the fist in the glove to go after the Jews and lock them up, and then onward at the, you know, towards, as the war broke out, to kill them. So there was, at least it was a fig leaf or a pretext of a law, quote unquote, to do this action. We don't even have that. We have the agency and the enforcement, but there's no law codifying what is malinformation and who gets
the... That's a fascinating point. And if you, I mean, if we continue the descent into World War II and Nazism, the number of Jews or the percentage of Jews killed in Germany during World War II was lower than in other countries, in part because the Germans were sticklers for exactly what Sefton just described, which is the rule of law must control their obscenity of a culture. So when 90% of the Poles, of the Polish Jews were murdered, you know, Einsatzgruppen and extra-legal murder, extra-legal execution, I guess, in Germany, they did it strictly by the law. And it took longer, luckily for the few remaining German Jews. But I think that's a very interesting point, that there really isn't any law that is governing this horrible, horrible organization. So they can do whatever they want.
Well, there sort of is. And when I say there sort of is, and if we want to keep on with the Nazi Germany theme, they had it as well, right? Which is the establishment of all of these agencies were all made possible through enabling acts. We don't call them that, but in essence, that's what they were. And a lot of people always rail against the administrative state and the deep state and the permanent bureaucracy, and were right to rail against that. But it was all made possible, in essence, by Congress abdicating its duty to pass law and to write legislation. And so they passed these single laws that say this is now an agency and this is its scope, and now they can go do what they want. We have this weird hybrid monster called administrative law and the regulatory complex that has its own enforcement and its own courts and its own cops. And they created this vast parallel system of basically executive law writing by just handing off the keys to all of these agencies they created. And so they have all of these enabling acts. So there isn't this specific law saying, yeah, what the DHS is doing with their Ministry of Truth is legal. But there is surely law out there that says the DHS can operate within its purview that we defined as Congress, and otherwise we're hands off. And so if you're looking for a fig leaf, it's not a very good one. A specific enabling legislation would have been better. But the DHS, along with all these other agencies, pretty much do what they want within the confines of their very generous charters. And that is entirely Congress's fault, and it is entirely within the ability of Congress to fix by defunding or writing a new law that dissolves those agencies. They could do it. Whether they could enforce it is another question, but they could do it. And all of this is because we have had our own series of enabling acts going back to Wilson. And they, each one gets worse. And yes, the Constitution is supposed to be the final check on all of that. And it might end up being the final check on this new disinformation bureau once somebody gets a lawsuit all the way up to the Supreme Court over it. But it shouldn't need to be there. But they can, I'm sure that somewhere their argument will be they're operating within their charter and they're not in violation of the Constitution by doing so.
Well, thank you, Joe Mannix, for making it even worse than I had imagined. I really appreciate that.
And by the way, that brings up the salient point is now you know why they want to control the Supreme Court, or all the courts, I should say, because when they put their stooges on there, like this Jumanji Action Jackson chick and Sotomayor and all the others, when they're on there, they're a rubber stamp. Yeah, and oh, there it is. Boom, there it is. It's constitutional, totally kosher, not a problem. And that is why they're in a way. I saw an article about why they're freaking out because of Roe versus Wade, because it reverses this. It, at least in one part, it puts a crack in that ability to sort of, whenever they put the seal of approval and make a law kosher for all time, that is horrible, like Obamacare and Roe versus Wade, seemingly. Then that's it. There is no recourse. But for them to have this crack or this ability to reverse this, thank goodness, because you have justices that Donald Trump put on the court at least doing their duty here. This is crucial for them. So it's they to control all the marbles, whether it's the enacting of a law, which can or cannot happen, or the imposition, as Joe, as you elucidated, in the bureaucratic state, which is part really the executive branch. And then when it goes to court to determine whether it's constitutional or not, they're going to put the seal of approval on it 99.99 times out of 100. And the rare moment that they don't is a miracle.
This goes back to the Supreme Court holding Chevron versus NRDC, I think. Natural Resources Defense Council. But I don't remember what year it was, which allowed broad deference to these ridiculous administrative regulations. I saw a comment in Ace of Spades today or yesterday, perhaps, that Gorsuch is rumored to be trying to create a coalition within the court to do something about that Supreme Court holding, the Chevron. They shorten it to Chevron. That would go a long way to easing what Joe has described. But whether that will happen, I have no idea. Well,
I mean, just in as a complete amateur, and I am not a legal expert in any stretch of the imagination, but from a political standpoint, I can't see how people like Jackson or Kagan or Sotomayor or Roberts or whomever giving an inch on that, because they know that that's the other part of the formula that makes sure that the Overton window and the political march toward socialism never gets unratcheted back the other way. So I can't see them. And the other part of the equation is Congress not wanting to take, they want to just stay there and have their jobs and do their thing and eat at the trough, so to speak, and get their bribe money. They don't want to risk their political careers by going on a limb and passing laws that are either unpopular or whatever, or will have an effect on their political futures. So they offload all this crap to the bureaucracy and to the justices to essentially do their bidding. Of course, certain things like abortion or national health care or nationalizing elections and so on and so forth, oh hell yeah, they're gonna go pedal to the metal if they can do it to gin up their base. But other than that, yeah, no one's gonna risk pissing off the base and taking a risk, and they just sit there on their asses in Congress collecting their paychecks, and they're there for life, and they just don't want to take that risk, which is a shame. Hopefully that changes when you have people like, be it DeSantis or Marjorie Taylor Greene or all these people coming into the Republican Party, and God willing, we do get this process rolling where we can roll back this crap. But it's a daunting task.
You're asking for a cultural shift in America that hopefully is coming, but I think that's a perfect segue to the next segment.
And before we get to the next segment, let's take a bit of a break. This is Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. We will be back in just a minute. Hang in there. We're back, J.J. Sefton, CBD, and Joe Mannix. And Joe, you have some thoughts on our upcoming topic of the cultural shift.
Yeah, well, hopeful cultural shift. It's the first time I've seen some glimmers of hope in a long time. But there are two things that really come to the fore for me. Well, three. One of them is related to the prior topic. But we have the Disney effect, the chilling effect on some of our woke corporations. And we have 2,000 Mules, and we have Roe v. Wade. And in all three of those, the reaction and the evolution of it has been interesting to me. So we have PR firms talking about how they're burning up airtime talking with their corporate clients about how to handle the Roe v. Wade decision, assuming that all of the leaks are correct and it will be overturned, which is going back to some real fundamental basics, like don't assume your customer agrees with you. Don't assume your employees agree with you. You know, real simple stuff that shouldn't be a mystery to the people with their hands on the levers of power. But people, basically these CEOs in the condition of being terrified of being the next Disney is how I've seen it put. Nobody wants to have to go toe-to-toe with Governor DeSantis or one of his acolytes. Nobody wants to suffer a boycott. Nobody wants to have to pick up and move their headquarters because they really pissed off the wrong person this time. And they're terrified. And importantly, they're terrified into inaction, which isn't the best outcome, but it's an outcome I'll certainly accept. Just shut up and sell the product. I'm fine with that. But that's one piece, is this evolution of after DeSantis cracked the whip on Disney, it's engendered some panic in boardrooms and C-suites of some of our biggest, wokest corporations. And not everybody is taking that to heart. You know, we have the Amazons of the world saying we'll provide abortion travel as a named employee fringe benefit, right? But the silence has been deafening, right? 6 months ago, if this had happened, every company in America would be in lockstep on Twitter and writing op-eds and sponsoring full-page ads in the Washington Post about how this is just absolutely dreadful and it needs to be stopped and this doesn't support our values as a corporation or the values of our stakeholders. And we're not seeing any of that. And that's fascinating to me. And I hope that it's a very good sign. And then beyond that, we have the 2,000 Mules thing. Right. Which is, I haven't seen it yet. Full disclosure, I'm planning to actually watch that this evening. But it's newsworthy. And we've had this kind of thing before, you know, where there's a conservative movie that goes into something like this. And it's very popular and makes a lot of waves online, but it doesn't actually make a big difference. It doesn't change anything. And time will tell if that's going to be the case with this as well. But I have some hope that it might have slightly broader reaching effects, because there are a lot of people who suddenly, very suddenly over the course of the last 2 years, a lot of the blinders appear to have come off to some degree. Right now we have a major source of the informal opposition that's always aligned with state goals. That's the giant woke corporate complex is suddenly being very cautious about this kind of stuff, which gives things like 2,000 Mules, or gives things like questioning the Ministry of Truth, or gives things like raising an eyebrow over the insane reaction of the hard left over the Roe v. Wade news. It gives a lot more opportunity for that kind of thing to breathe. So what I'm not certain at all is that any of it matters. But it's the first time in a while I've seen even a glimmer of hope that those goalposts might be starting to move in the culture as opposed to merely among the punditry. And if that's the case, then I think it's a really good development, even if it's simply because of CEOs cowering in terror over becoming the next Disney. Hey, I'd prefer it if they actually had a change of heart. If all they have is a healthy dose of fear, I'll take it.
You know, a lot of this started, though. I mean, you mentioned Ron DeSantis, but Ron DeSantis couldn't have done this, and I think he would have done it anyway, but let's just put him out there as an example. He wouldn't have done this if he did not see, and everybody didn't see, what happened when parents in Loudoun County, Virginia, and elsewhere, tuned into the Zoom call sessions of their kids online who were remotely learning, and they were being groomed and transsexualized and critical race theory to death, and were absolutely appalled by this. And when they opened up and went to school board meetings and let the teachers and let the principals know that this was unacceptable, that put a lot of steel in the spine of people like Ron DeSantis. Not that I don't think he needed it, but other people. And then that reaction caused the political reaction which I think is spreading from DeSantis, hopefully to other people in our party for sure. I mean, I hope so, because it's a totally winning issue. And I think that's also all in combination is what put the fear of God into these corporations with this decision now to keep their mouths shut, because they're going to get smacked down. And hopefully, you know, let the steel in someone's spine, you know, go on to the rest of the Republican Party. It's going to happen overnight? Of course not, because we still have idiots like Murkowski and Collins and Romney and so on and so forth. But that's where the political winds are blowing. And the power, though, comes from the bottom all the way up. And that's the effect. I think that's a salutary effect and gives me at least a little bit of hope for the future.
This is a catastrophic overreaction on the part of the left, because they have been in their bubble for so long that they simply do not know what is going on in the hearts and minds of most Americans. America loves its children, and most of America will look at the news and say, gee, that's crazy, what's for breakfast? But when you go after their kids, it shifts the paradigm hard toward defending what we know is best. And as I said, the miscalculation is unbelievable. And my guess is that it is, at least in part, a function of the lack of children in among the hard left. These are people who believe that the earth is overpopulated, that China's one child policy was perfectly okay, and that abortion on demand should be a wonderful thing and a human right. Well, they don't have many kids, and America does have lots of kids, and their attack on those children has awakened, hopefully, as Joe has pointed out, hopefully awakened the sleeping giant.
You know, what's really interesting is that, CBD, you just mentioned that the childlessness of the left, generally speaking, that they're just completely barren, that they live either, whether it's, and I have nothing against homosexuals, it's either homosexual couples or just people who decide to be childless for whatever reasons that they want to do that. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Randy Weingarten, the horrendous self-gassing Jew, as I call her, is, I believe, you know, she's the head of the UFT or the NEA or the AFT or one of the big teacher unions. I don't think she's either married. I don't think she has any children. And yet she runs a teacher's union. Go
figure.
Yeah,
it doesn't surprise me at all.
I mean, that's just, I mean, the irony of that is just, the sick irony of that is telling.
And something CBD just said there, and I think it's important because it ties into how complicated the world is, I guess, to some degree, which is they don't know what normal people think because they're very insulated. And I think that's true. But they've also been taking a lot of fairly important, fairly affirmative steps to make sure that they never know what people think, right? And the censorship regime, whether it's done informally, thanks to our great friends and fine leaders in big tech, or officially, like this new DHS organization, is the downside to widespread censorship by default is it lets you push your message and only your message and crush dissent. And that looks like a great thing if you happen to be a tyrant. But what it also does is it creates an intelligence vacuum. You are no longer able to know what real people might think about what you're doing. And so it makes the consequences to it invisible. And then what happens is you end up getting really, really surprised when something doesn't go your way, because as far as you know, everybody agrees with you, because you have literally made it impossible to have a dissenting opinion in any meaningful way. So that's why you end up getting surprised by what might be the gravest miscalculation in the history of the American left, which was going for the brass ring of total control under the umbrella of COVID response, and in so doing, exposing normal people to what they've been up to in the classroom. That level of inadvertent transparency and exposure was clearly not seen as a risk. And the only way you could not see that as a risk, if you're doing it, is either you're a true believer, and I'm sure they have plenty of them, or you genuinely think that there is no opposition to any of it because you've never once seen it.
Let's look back at Romania just a few years ago. And how do you pronounce his last name? Kosescu?
Ceaușescu.
Ceaușescu.
Nicolae Ceaușescu.
He went from speaking at a probably a Communist Party conference of some kind and was heckled once. And that blew open the entire country. It showed that he was not in total control. And he had no idea. And this speaks speaks to what Joe just talked about. They don't know.
Right. And Ceaușescu is a fascinating study. And what happened in Romania is a fascinating study, because Ceausescu essentially did have total control until the very moment he didn't, right? And what triggered the revolution in Romania was nothing. It was the routine oppression of a village priest, something totally normal. It was nothing. It just happened to be the last straw, and within 2 weeks, he was dead in a schoolhouse. It went incredibly quickly, and the trigger objectively didn't make any sense. But when you have a pressure cooker, it doesn't matter what raises the pressure, the final millibar that makes the damn thing explode. It can be virtually anything, and it's almost always something surprising. The entire failure of the Ceausescu regime in Romania was incredibly fast and predicated on such a nothing burger that it's fascinating. And this is what happens when you have a lot of rot building up in your system and a lot of brittleness and failure building up in your system that you literally cannot see because you've turned off all the lenses looking at it.
Well, here's the other part of the token is that you have complete demonization of anyone and anything that is not 100% hardcore leftist. That's number one. So they do not want to hear your opinion. Number two, they are of the belief, and they believe their own PR that, for example, they think that 25 or 30% of the country, for example, is gay. And that's just ridiculous on the face of it. Or they think that they are the majority of opinion just because they control all the media, let's say, and all the culture. And so they're in this sort of vacuum or this loop, I forget the terminology of it, where it's just a closed system. And they just breathe in all this nonsense, and they think that they've created this illusion of the world, which just does not exist. So when one little thing pricks that bubble and destroys that illusion, they go absolutely crazy and they can't deal with it. And the fact that they've demonized us so thoroughly and so completely, definitely over the last 10 years, if not the last 40 or 50, there's no way that they want to have any kind of a rapprochement or any kind of dialogue with someone, because they just completely don't recognize the fact that we have a right to have an opinion that's counter to theirs, let alone that we're on an equal footing of them, morally, spiritually, or as a human being. So this is a very toxic mix we're in, but in a way, it's definitely a cleansing moment that a lot of people who are sort of not really paying attention to this are finally seeing it for what it is. And the more that they go crazy in front of Justice Alito's house or do whatever they do, or say gay or dress up as gay or do gay story hour, transsexual story hour for children, let them do it. Because if they believe that, most of the population sees this as normal, when they don't, then it's only going to cause them to implode on themselves, and then also to take it out on the rest of us.
You know, it's very interesting what you said. I was thinking about the Ministry of Disinformation, or whatever the hell the name of it is.
And, Disinformation and Governance Board or something?
Board, yeah, that's it. And I've been trying to figure out exactly what they mean by disinformation, misinformation, malinformation. And it has, I've been poking around the internet, and I found all sorts of amorphous definitions. In reality, what they are collections of newspeak, the leftist cant that is nonsensical to me and anyone who speaks English reasonably well. They cannot define it, because there is no definition for misinformation. What they really mean, and what they will never say, is speech that we do not like. That is the only definition that is operating in the Ministry of Disinformation.
It has been defined, sort of, but the definitions are like laughably broad. So
yeah, they're so fluid
CISA, Cybersecurity Infrastructure and Security Agency, which is one of those many, many intelligence
agencies.
What the fuck
is that?
defines it as such, and this is what feeds the DHS's definition. They borrow it from CISA. I'll read it right off their website. Misinformation is false, but not created or shared with the intention of causing harm. Disinformation is deliberately created to mislead, harm, or manipulate a person, social group, organization, or country. So it's the difference is intent, but both are false. And then malinformation is based on fact, but used out of context to mislead, harm, or manipulate.
So pretty much free speech.
Which is the catch-all. Yes.
Yeah, that's called precisely. Free speech.
But but that right there, and it's on CISA's website. You can go to CISA.gov/MDM, and it's right there on their website. That's the definition.
John Peter Zenger, eat your heart out. I mean, holy God. I mean, this is just, come on. What is this crap? Again, we talked about people that you can you can disagree with, and there are a few of them, such as Naomi Wolf and Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald. Again, I disagree on their political views or on their views of the world. I probably disagree with them 99 out of 100 times, but the fact that they are so dead right on just at least recognizing the fact that somebody can have an opinion that is opposite theirs and can have a discussion with them, whether it's a heated discussion or a pleasant discussion, is another issue. But the fact that to deny me the right to have that discussion, this is just, yeah, we are way beyond, we are in dangerous territory. And with what's going on here with the sanctioning of political violence, what we were talking about, like Lori Lightfoot and up until Joe Biden, and they've issued this mealy-mouthed sort of condemnation of it. It wasn't even a condemnation. It was a non-condemnation of the violence, of the torching of the pro-life offices in Madison, Wisconsin, and so on and so forth. This comes from the top down. They are officially telling people, their supporters, that it is okay and open season on anybody who supports the repeal of Roe versus Wade. Period. End of story. And we're back, JJ Sefton, CBD, Joe Mannix, for our final segment of the podcast. And, you know, we're having a great old time in the Ukraine and in Russia, poking the Russian bear and thinking that a country with 6,000 nuclear warheads isn't gonna have a reaction.
I wrote about the failings of Russia in this morning's rant on Ace of Spades. And I pointed out that Russia is not a world power. It's a regional power, but it has as Sefton pointed out, they've got 6,000 nuclear weapons, and we have to take them seriously, and we have to respect them simply for the damage that they can cause us. And it doesn't matter that they are in the wrong in Ukraine. Nobody really cares about that. All I care about, and I think I speak for many, many Americans, all I care about is that the United States government is seemingly purposefully inflaming passions with Russia. They are poking and poking and poking and making public that which should not be public. Okay, fine. We've made a strategic decision to support the Ukrainian effort against the Russian army. Fine. Do it privately. Do it secretly. Plausible deniability is a fine thing. But crowing about it in public is childish, it's dangerous, and it adds a note of chaos to an already chaotic situation.
You know, it's tantamount to actually a declaration of war. When you're saying that we helped them, we gave them intelligence that shot down a plane full of their soldiers, or we gave them intelligence that sank two of their warships, you know, this is, you're admitting literally to it, aiding and abetting an enemy, and it technically is an act of war. So, I mean, what is the purpose of all this?
It is, but I think it goes beyond that. Intelligence sharing is one thing, and you can get away with that, probably. It doesn't necessarily mean you should court that particular dance, but you can. But some of what was said last week, and who knows whether it's true or not, it almost doesn't matter, is, you know, we had American military contractors manning Javelin batteries and operating on that intelligence. And if that's true, then that's a much bigger deal. That's, you know, the military advisor thing that became so popular in the latter part of the last century, if that's what's going on. But to what CBD said, and I think you touched on it as well, JJ, is who does something like this, and why would you go open your stupid mouth about it, right? Assume it's all going on. Why are you boasting about it on international television? And I think the reason for it, because I've been puzzling about this for a while myself, because it doesn't make any sense. It's utterly irrational to talk about this. And to the point that, you know, during the Second World War, we had a major propaganda campaign in this country. All the combatant nations did. And one of the major themes of that propaganda war was shut the hell up, right? About troop movements, about intelligence, about war production, whatever it is. And this isn't exactly rocket science. And so why are they doing it? And what I come up with, and this is wild supposition on my part, I have no space in their heads, is that they're a bunch of cowards, essentially, and they're braggarts, and right, they're in control, they're in power, and they want everybody to know it, but they're actually very weak men. And they're boasting about it so that they can tell who the real, you know, big swinging dicks are in Washington, right? It's, we are, look how cool and brave and powerful I am. I ordered a kill on a Russian general, right? And it's childish and it's arrogant and it is completely insane and completely stupid. And even if it doesn't result in an escalation of actual shooting war conflict, whether it goes nuclear or not, between us and Russia, is the damage has been so deep and so complete that Russia is not going to be aligned with the West when this is over. And that's a serious problem because we have a real enemy in that region. And Russia has never been all that friendly with the West. They've never been our ally. We've been at loggerheads more often than we haven't been. And we tend to piss in each other's swimming pools. That said, Russia as an economy and Russia as a technical power and as an industrial power has been more aligned with the West than it has with the East since the fall of the Soviet Union. They use German machinery. They use American software. They clear through European banking systems. They are not an ally. They are, in fact, a rival, and they are, in fact, dangerous. But they have been integrated, so far as they integrated with anyone, with our side. And that's over now. They're being left with no choice. And that leaves them with having to integrate with somebody else because, as CBD pointed out, they are not really a global superpower anymore. They're an important regional power. And important regional powers need allies. And they need to integrate with someone. And the only player left is going to be in the East. And the most obvious player is China. And what we will have managed to do with all of this is force them, even if it doesn't involve having nuclear weapons go off, which it certainly might, it's going to push them out of integration with the West and into integration with the East to our great long-term detriment.
And not just the East, to the South, too, to Iran. They want to build Iranian nuclear reactors. That's, probably tens of billions of dollars over the next couple of decades. And making that decision easier and easier for Russia is not in our best interest. I think that's the only important thing that's going on with Ukraine right now, what Joe just said. We are driving them toward China. And that's a terrible thing. There is nothing good that can come out of that.
In the idiocy of it, you talked about what's going on in their head, and especially the empty and melting head of Mr. Biden, is because of the complete and utter disaster and fiasco of the bug out from Afghanistan. I think they're doing this partially to prove how macho and wonderful they are. Hey, see, look what we did. We helped sink a warship. We're not that inept after all. That's part of it. And the other thing is the absolute catastrophe of our economy going through, literally collapsing. We're not going back to the 1970s. We may be going back to the 1930s, but by the time stagflation and all of this hits, and supply chain problems and shortages of food and shortages of energy, and all of this is self-induced because he's grasping at the insanity of the crazy environmentalist movement. So all of this is just as insane as it is a distraction away from the catastrophe that they're causing here in the United States of America. And the other part of the equation is, as horrible as Putin is, and he is horrible, everybody, because of the Russia collusion hoax, equates Putin with Trump. So now Trump, they're just interchangeable. So you're going after Putin, it's the same thing as going after Donald Trump, because of course they're in bed with each other, which now has been proven as a complete lie, but it goes around the world 50,000 times before truth gets the pants put on, or before the Ministry of Truth take the pants back off again, so to speak. So that's
could
what's
going. Could it be as stupid and simple as the current regime in Washington trying to demonize Putin and Trump even more? Is that why they're inflating Ukraine into potentially a global war? Are they really that stupid?
Yeah,
it's possible.
They could be. And JJ, you said something there I had never considered, and I think it's worth thinking about a lot, is how much of this recklessness that we're engaging in and with regard to Ukraine hangover from the Afghanistan bug out. That's not something I had even considered. And I think that's an interesting point. Who knows whether it's true, but it's certainly worth giving some thinking space to. So thanks for that.
Let me just jump in for 1 second there, and just on that note, is that besides the Afghanistan disaster. People are going crazy with the dismantling of our military capability and our morale vis-a-vis inclusivity and diversity in the armed forces as opposed to military preparedness. So maybe this is their own way of, you see, the guy in the woman in the pregnancy flight suit and the transsexual soldier, look what they just did. They sunk a couple of Russian warships. So there's that calculus as well.
Another interesting point. They're out to prove that they aren't incompetent. Because there's been a lot of incompetence to go around over the last year and a half of this maladministration.
And we still have another, what is it? Oh my God, if we live through it, it's another, 2.5 years of this left. And even then, there's no guarantee.
Yeah, thereabouts.
So we've got a couple of quick hits. Yes. In the news, which I think are reasonably interesting. The first one I noticed is that Fauci, I think it was Fauci or maybe one of his minions, announced that COVID is nowhere near done, that, you know, the end is nigh, that we're going to have 100 million cases of it in the next couple of seasons. And my only thought about that is, 100 million goddamn cases of the fucking common cold. Because as everybody with a brain expected, COVID-19 has morphed from a dangerous disease for those with comorbidity to what is essentially the common cold, because most coronaviruses are nothing more than colds. He's desperately trying to stay in the news cycle. He is desperately trying to remain relevant. And announcing 100 million cases, I think, is an overreach, because Americans look at that and say, what does that mean? 100 million cases? Are 100 million people going to die? Are 100 million people who are not vaccinated, which does not exist in the United States, because there is no cohort of 100 million people in this country who have not been vaccinated. All he's saying is, oh, guess what? The vaccine doesn't work very well. You're going to get a cold, and I'm going to continue to pontificate on television whenever I can. I see no other... Go ahead.
Yeah, he wants to remain relevant. He wants to maintain his power. He's furious about this, the pandemic is over attitude. Right. And what's really funny about
he said it himself, yeah. And then he backtracked when they told him to backtrack.
Yeah.
Right. He, of all people, ought to know, the pandemic is, right? It's in the environment now. It's endemic now. So live with it. And living with it isn't going to be that big a deal. Back in January, I got it. I'm guessing it was the Omicron type because it wasn't very bad. I was sick for a few days. It sucked. I've had worse flus. And that doesn't mean that nobody will die of COVID ever again. But it does mean the extraordinary response, even assuming it was possible for it to work, it didn't. And that phase is over. And Fauci knows it. And he went from being the unquestioned broad spectrum dictator of this country to lashing out on CNN in his tiny fury over people not taking him seriously enough.
The proof of all this, which of course you won't see it because it's malinformation or disinformation or whatever information, was Sweden. Sweden never locked down. Sweden never imposed vaccine mandates. Sweden never had mask mandates. And they came out smelling like a rose. They had no less cases and deaths and everything else that associated with this than the most draconian countries and jurisdictions that locked everybody down and forced them to get vaccinated. So that's the proof. Of course, we can't see that because that is the proof. It disproves the last 3 years of fear porn that destroyed the world and still destroying the world. And it's messed up the lives of billions of people, mentally, physically, spiritually, you name it. So
the last thing was an interesting little tidbit in the news that a group of Orthodox Jews were thrown off of a Lufthansa flight for refusing to wear masks or arguing about the use of masks. I'm not really sure what happened. It's not that important. Mostly it's rather funny that Lufthansa, of all airlines on Earth, didn't have the sensitivity to say, you know something, maybe we shouldn't do this. But they did. And it reminds me of a story. I had an uncle who was an engineer and then a manager for El Al. And in the 70s, he claims this is true. He was working on a 747, and they were in line to take off at JFK in New York. And there was a long line, and on the radio, they hear Lufthansa 56 Heavy, we seem to have a problem with our manifest. We are missing a passenger. And there's a little bit of chatter on the radio, and he swears this is true. The American Airlines pilot behind them said, Lufthansa 56 Heavy, have you checked the ovens?
Oh, my.
Now, I don't know if it's true.
No.
Yeah.
What I find so baffling about this whole thing, right, is there was actually some really good back and forth in the comment sections on Ace yesterday about this. And my immediate reaction to it was pretty bad, as you could imagine. And somebody there, I forget who it was, and that's bad on me, you know, basically said, well, pump the brakes. If you have a large group and a large number of people in that group are disobeying the rules, which in this case they apparently were, it was a stupid rule, but set that aside for a moment, that basically banning the entire group, kicking the entire group off the plane, isn't all that unusual from an airline standpoint. So let's assume for a moment that that's what happened, right? So like in the example he gave was, you know, you have a football team traveling where 75% of the people are being unruly, they'll kick the entire football team off the plane, right? Deal with it. So let's assume it was something analogous to that. The language that Lufthansa used is pretty shocking, right? Which is, we're not letting Jews on the plane. It's not your group are misbehaving, so you're not allowed on. It's, we're not allowing Jews on the plane. And since then, nothing that I've seen from like Lufthansa corporate or Lufthansa damage control department has backtracked on that. It's not, they didn't, if it was something like that, right? This group was generally being unruly, so we kicked the group off the plane. That's an easy explanation. You can even fit that in one tweet, right? It's our gate agent misspoke. She is used to speaking German and she spoke English instead and she used the wrong words. This is not what it looks like. This group was being unruly and we kicked them off the plane. If that's what was going on, that's a pretty easy thing to go fix. And Lufthansa seemingly hasn't done so. And that is just fascinating to me. This should be a pretty easy thing to talk your way out of. And they just haven't done it. It's just festering, and I can't figure out why.
Well, I just saw this come over the wire. It turns out that Lufthansa is going to be hiring Whoopi Goldberg to be their PR manager in order to explain.
Brilliant.
It wasn't the juju. You know, it was bad juju. Or as I call her, Fat Albert Speer. But there you have it. Anyway, gentlemen, this brings to a close another scintillating hour of the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. JJ Sefton, CBD Joe Mannix, we will see you next time, and hopefully with Jews.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Thank you.